Welcome to the 99s. We'd like to wish any Muslim listeners a happy Ramadan. We hope fasting isn't too difficult. And also a happy Vaisakhi to our Sikh fans. On an unrelated note, the first person to correctly identify the music playing now can win a free hat. So get in touch with us on Instagram or via email. And if you're right and the first, you win a free hat. Now on with the show. I don't think you can try and use Shazam. I've tested it to make sure that Shazam doesn't know what this song is, and it doesn't. So you're going to have to just actually know what it is. So good luck.
Hello and welcome to the 99s Rugby Podcast. Whether you like Mr. Whippy or Soft Scoop, we can all agree a fab is a terrible ice cream.
Oh, I don't know. I quite like a fab. What are you on about? Well, I like the top third of a fab. And it gets worse as it goes down, actually.
Yeah, two thirds are terrible. Yeah, come on.
Like a rocket lolly is... I like a rocket lolly, but the base is the worst part. So you've got mostly lemon and the good bits. The nice bits are the top two, but they go away. And it's lemon underneath anyway.
There are some poor ones on there. You know, when we get out to tournaments this summer, I'm expecting some good ice creams. And from some tournaments we spoke to already, I've said the requirement for us to enter is they have at least two ice cream vans. And of both, they don't serve screwball or rum and raisin. I've put some controversial points out there, Daph. We're taking control of the ice cream game with this shit.
Yeah. I'd like a raspberry ripple. That's a nice old-fashioned ice cream.
Absolutely, mate. Aside from ice cream choices then, how's your week gone, man? How you been?
It's been good. I've had the week off work this week, so I've done just nothing, really. It's been nice. First week off since Christmas. So, and before that, I haven't had like a full week off. I had like long weekends here or there. So just have that whole time doing nothing. Good.
Yeah, we had those bank holidays, didn't we? You know, like the Easter break and stuff like that just now. But it's nice having that sort of full week off. I had one myself just at the end of March there. And yeah, just really good. Like, means we can get more stuff done with this, to be fair. We can follow the passion project a little bit more, can't we? Which is pretty cool. What beer are you drinking, man?
Very, very fancy one. It's called Club Tropica, but Club is spelt with a W. Because they're from Wales. It's made by people from Tiny Rebel, who I'm pretty sure someone had another beer in the earlier episode, but I didn't realise they're from Newport, apparently. So, yucky da to this. It's very nice. It's like a Solero. Very passion fruity.
Fair enough, man. I'm championing the H2O today because, well, for one, I got absolutely smashed at a bit of a barbecue yesterday down here, which, you know, a bit loose, too many lager beers, feeling a little bit ropey today, bit of a headache. But as well, obviously, with us being sort of 90 days away from our first tournament that we're entered into, it's a good time to sort of really focus on that. So I think, you know, we were chatting the other day, but we've both sort of committed to having 90 days dry from tomorrow in terms of, you know, no heavy drinking or anything like that, no drinking at all if we can help it until we hit our first tournament.
Indeed. I should be quite the challenge, especially because we drink beer every single week on the podcast. But thankfully, we've got our good partners at the Yarder Collective.
Yeah. So we've had the confirmation the beers are coming through from them. That'll be with us, I think, sometime this week. So that's great. So this next episode we do, sort of next Sunday time, will be a nice, cool, non-alcoholic beverage in hand. So we can enjoy that and talk about that a little bit. Compare, see if the game's been upped, because as we've mentioned before, the market was pretty poor before. We're talking Beck's Blue, no thank you. But overall, we'll see how that goes. So that's exciting as well. But, you know, just one other little plug, a couple of our friends going to touch this week. Three of our good chums from back when we were playing rugby at John Cleveland and Hinckley RFC back in the day are doing a charity bike ride. They're biking from Leicester to Skegness in order to raise money for the air ambulance services. So big shout out to those guys. I'm sure we'll pop up the link to their Just Giving page in there. But yeah, no, great work from them. One of our friends who's involved in it, our old captain from school, Harry Whitehurst, is working. He works in A's, one of the first sort of responder type guys when people come in after a serious injury through the air ambulance. So obviously a cause that's close to his heart. And yeah, a couple of the friends have jumped on the bandwagon, or on the saddle in this case, to make the ride to the beach, you know?
I hope they get on the penny fountains when they get there. That'd make it more of a challenge, actually. They have like a big sack of 2p's on their back and then just get there and just chuck them in on the pushes. It's the only good thing about Skegness. The only redeeming feature. It's a horrible place.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing. You know, that's the great thing about living down in the southwest. Everyone keeps asking me, like, you know, oh, how do you find it down here? And I'm sort of like, well, it's really nice being sort of like 10 or 15 minutes from the beach rather than 2 hours and it being a horrendous beach. the whole Scunthorpe Skegness area is not a desirable location.
Oh, that North Lincolnshire region, it's not pretty.
It's not pretty, yeah, for sure.
To be fair, the last time I went to Skegness as well, I was suffering from a concussion. And as you can imagine, it's a lot of noise, a lot of strong smells, a bit of sensory overload. The worst place to go with a concussion. It was my mum's birthday, so I couldn't say no. And I had a miserable time, but a very, very, very nice fish and chips. Arguably the best I've ever had. So well done, Skegness. But
fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, we've got 90 days dry then. So getting ourselves in shape for these first tournaments. It's been well over a year since I've played at all. I've sort of retired from the 15-a-side format, focused on coaching. So for me, it would be interesting to get out there and actually play again. And obviously the physical demand of sevens, which albeit I've played and enjoyed before, going to have to get back into shape for that. So, you know, it's kind of nice. We've got a bit of a training montage coming up to have kind of like real life over this next 90 days. Might do some clips, put them online or something like that. But yeah, I mean, that's in time for our first tournament, which is pretty much 90 days away to the day. Which will be the Macclesfield Sevens on the 10th of July. That will be the first tournament that the 99s will ever represent at. And then from there, we've definitely got a spot at the Lightchet Sevens, which is placed just outside Bournemouth. That is going to be on the 7th of August. So we've got two tournaments in the bag already, and we've got a few more in the works potentially. So a pretty stacked summer in the end, mate, after considering there was no rugby a couple of few weeks ago, really.
Yes. Buzzing. I can't wait. It's been so long since I've held a rugby ball in anger. Because I think I was injured for ages. I think September 2019 was last time I played a proper game of rugby. Because I got really ill. and then never got back to play. And then the world ended. So
Yeah, it's been a long old
spark. It's been a while. But I'm in probably better shape now than I ever was playing rugby, so.
Yeah, you get that chance, don't you? Like last year, I did a lot of running and stuff like myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people did. You know, a lot of guys moving from the front five to the back row, potentially, I think, maybe, if they get themselves slimming in shape. Or in some my people case, going the other way.
My case, moving from the front row to sevens, playmaker role. As previously established, a flair player. So, you know, finally get a chance to let my skills do the talking instead of just scrimmaging technique.
Fantastic, man. So have we got anything else going on at the moment online or anything like that, or any updates for the people?
Oh boy, do we. You may have seen already, we've put it on our social media, and if you happen to know us in real life, we've probably put it on our personal social medias as well. But we have a crowdfunder. We're looking to crowdfund our some of our kit anyway. Hopefully get a bit of money going towards our kit. All the links are on our Instagram. They're on our website. I don't think I put it on a website yet. It will be on a website by the time this is released. I had a week off. I set the crowdfunder up, so I've done half a job. There are a number of awards, anything from getting a podcast shout out to bits of stash. It's on there, have a look through. We've got some pretty cool stash because we're a pretty cool pair of chaps.
Yeah, no, it's a great opportunity to try and get involved with us, isn't it? You know, maybe get, like you say, a bit of stash or whatever.
Any donation will be greatly appreciated for any small amount. So as little as £2, two of the Queen's pounds we'll get you a podcast shout out. So, and if you're a business or you have more money than sense, you can sponsor our shirt just yourself. We'll just put your name or your face on the front if you pick it, give us like 700 quid. So, but ideally it should be a business, but you know, get in touch. It's on the crowdfunding rewards. You can see our emails. Give us some of your money, please. Please, we need it desperately.
Yeah, you know, and literally, like you've said there, you know, that couple of pounds, the price of a cup of coffee from Starbucks or whatever, you know, you could help us potentially like change the rugby landscape a little bit and, you know, sort of give that opportunity for people outside of the traditional circles of, you know, your public school, etc., to maybe get a chance of hitting the elite level of the game in a very, you know, special format like we've mentioned already, that is rugby sevens. So, yeah, get on there, give us a bit of money. We'll, you know, let the page and the chat do the talking for itself, and we'll see if people want to get involved. But yeah, no, by all means, get involved and we'll see how we go. So we've obviously got our agenda laid out, but you know, looking at the start, as always, Dave, let's recap the weekend headlines, the big headlines from the weekend. First up, just looking over, been a big weekend for the European Cup quarterfinals in both the Heineken Cup and the Pooh Cup. So, or the Mickey Mouse Cup, as Grandma Nurse calls it. So yeah, I mean, how much did you get to see this weekend? I've not watched too much rugby, to be fair, so I was beering up at the barbecue yesterday, but I've kept in touch with the scores, and it seems, you know, French dominance, really, isn't it, mate, to be honest?
It certainly looks that way. I will be perfectly honest. I've not watched any rugby this weekend at all. So this is just looking more or less a first reaction of the scores. I mean, I suppose the big game of the weekend, there's two shocks stand out. Well, it's not a shock, but the big game, Exeter Leinster. Leinster win of that one. So that's probably the biggest. Other big shock, Bordeaux beat Racing. And they're through. Who was it? La Rochelle smashed Sale, really. So there's three, well, there's two fairly small clubs in there, in La Rochelle and Bordeaux. And then Toulouse and Leinster, the big boy. So hopefully, I'd like to see either Bordeaux or La Rochelle win. It could be the final, because La Rochelle are playing Leinster, Bordeaux are playing Toulouse. I mean, you know, a year for the little guy, but little guy is bankrolled French club. But still, they never won it before, so it's a new name on the trophy.
Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. I think, you know, Racing today, I did watch some of that. They just didn't look at the races at all, but, you know, you've got to win your games, and fair play to Bordeaux going and winning it. I think Sale, from what I saw as well, give a relatively decent account of themselves, but just surprisingly, because in the Premiership, they seem to hold their own physically, they just couldn't really live with La Rochelle's physicality. I mean, they are a really good attacking team to watch, La Rochelle. Their intricate offloading game and their play around the fringes to get that offloading game just like directly through the middle of the pitch, rather than, you know, a lot of teams offload in the outside channels, but they're very direct with their offloading game, and it creates those line breaks in and around the ruck, which is just deadly. And obviously, they've got a great coach in there, in the man himself, old Ronan O'Gara. So, yeah, they look like they're attacking pretty well. Personally, wouldn't mind seeing Toulouse-Leinster shoot out for, like, you know, European supremacy. The two big boys, they've both sort of won it four times apiece, I think. It'd be good to see them two shoot out for that fifth star, as it is, or the fifth, you know, name on the trophy. Everyone bangs about the Pro 14 versus Premiership kind of thing, but I think it's like the British Isles and Ireland versus the French, isn't it, really? The French just seem to have absolute control at the moment. And is it big budgets and stuff like that? Or is it the fact that our league's too attritional? You know, they talk about the French league, you know, you don't really tend to play your best team for away games, you know, or are we just lacking maybe a bit of investment? It's a difficult one to nail.
Yeah, I think that's probably a bit of a case of all of the above. I think, like you say, the French teams, traditionally, you just accept you're going to lose away from home, so you send your B team. I think there's a bit less of that these days than there probably was 20 years ago, but I think it's a very different culture. I think they're just a bit more relaxed about everything, aren't they, really? I think the Premiership, I think it's very intense week in, week out. I think the top 14, you see, it does seem like there's some games where there's like a gentleman's agreement to just sort of half-ass it a little bit. That might be being mean. They're all professionals, I'm sure. They don't, but I don't know, this, I mean, we say this, like the Pro 14 with the Irish teams, they've got a massive advantage because literally nobody cares what happens to them week in, week out.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're playing Zebra away, it's not like you need to take the first team, is it? Do you know what I mean? They have that rest. Whereas in the Prem, you've got that threat of relegation and stuff. Like, you know, people have had these kind of arguments before, I guess, and we won't dwell on it too long, I think. But I think it's just interesting to note that when a domestic league is doing well, the international side does well as a reflection. And that seems to be where French rugby as a whole is at the moment.
I think it's personally, I'm glad to see it. I think France had a bit of a decade in the wilderness, really. Obviously, Toulon were quite dominant at the start of the last decade, but the national team sort of very hit and miss, more misses than hits. And then the bigger names, like Toulouse, obviously didn't do very well. We spoke about that last week, but it's nice to see them back in the European semi-final. To be honest, it's quite nice to see that Toulon have kind of dropped off as a club. I know you could argue that, you know, how any rugby club run, but obviously they came from nowhere, ploughed cash into it with a world-class squad, and have drifted away again a bit now. It always seemed a little bit artificial. Kind of like when Man City win something in football, it's like, oh, well, you've won, but like, no one cares. Because you've just got billions and billions at your disposal. So it's nice to see a couple of new names in the hat, and nice to see Toulouse, that sort of old guard, back on top. But I'm good to see, it's not nice to see France struggle. Obviously, I remember as a kid, like that was the England France was the big Six Nations game. It was like the decider when for like the first few tournaments of the Six Nations after it changed from the Five Nations. And obviously sort of Ireland got better and France kind of, and England both kind of dropped away and Wales got better and it became a more competitive tournament, but like France didn't have that almost fear factor about playing them anymore, but hopefully they come back and are like a real world force, like we said. I mean, they ended up coming, did they finish second in the Six Nations in the end? It was almost a bit of a...
Well, this year?
Yeah, I think they just about did on like a point or something, didn't they?
Yeah, it's like anything, like, you know, like we said the other week, Scotland went out there and won two games away from home and still finished fourth. So it's been a really weird year, I think. But yeah, so Heineken Cup's looking good, Titanic as always, and fair play, it's something to look forward to. You know, the final, obviously, that we mentioned last week, being at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, that'd be a good occasion, especially if fans are allowed back in potentially at that point. I know that's something they're trialling. But they're looking at, the Mickey Mouse Cup, obviously. Our guys, Leicester, I did watch a little bit of the Tigers game just while I was sort of knocking about. You know, Leicester looked pretty good, actually. They've got back to their kind of best a little bit, I think. We look like a bullying kind of team again, which is really good to see. And Newcastle, I think, just sort of ran out of steam a little bit now, really. I know they started off the season really strongly, but I just don't think they've got the squad depth to compete that much. Montpellier beating Benetton giving a good account of themselves against, you know, indifferent Montpellier, and Ulster setting up the semi-final against Leicester. Kind of like, I mean, back in the day, that would have been a Heineken Cup semi-final. That would have been a really big game. But now it's a Challenge Cup semi-final. How the mighty have fallen, eh, Daf?
Yeah, it's a strange one, the Challenge Cup, because part of me thinks they should just get rid of it because does it really matter? But then, obviously, there's some big names in there. Maybe it makes a difference if there's fans there. The very least is someone who lives near Tigers that Challenge Cup tickets are normally quite cheap.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's quite expensive to go there. Hopefully you can't actually go at the minute. But so there's potentially Bath, Montpellier, one semi-final, Leicester, Ulster. Like I say, the Leicester also could, but if we, it's been European knockout game, hasn't it? I'm sure. I didn't mean to be a semi-final before. But obviously that's a Heineken Cup clash or European Cup clash. Potentially Bath versus Leicester final, so a bit of a rivalry there. That would be probably the ideal one, wouldn't it? Where are they holding this final? Is this at Tottenham as well?
I believe so, yeah. And I think, you know, I think that'll be the final thing, this is a big test for Leicester, actually, you know, giving Tigers a little bit of focus. This will be a test to see how far they've come, because, you know, Ulster, of course, are no slouch and they've got great European pedigree and they know how to win tight games. So for this Leicester group of these, you know, these young Tigers, as they keep calling them, and, you know, the guys that have come in to sort of bolster that squad a little bit, it'll be a really good chance to see what the progress has actually been, you know, whether we are in a position that we are back towards the old standards and stuff like that. And then the other game, Montpellier-Bath, that's quite an interesting game. Obviously, your man Zach Mercer heading off to Montpellier from Bath next season. So that'd be quite an interesting one there. Does he stick one to the you know the future employers a little bit, show them what they're getting, and really sort of have a good time with it? Or yeah, is it going to be a Montpellier Tigers or Ulster final? Who knows? It's going to be quite interesting actually. I think that tournament gets good when it gets to this stage of the semi-final final because, like you say, the bigger teams are into it a bit more now. We're not talking about like you know the Russian teams or something like Anisi and stuff like that. We're talking about like the sort of best teams who aren't quite at the top level at the moment, which I think is an accurate characterization probably of Tigers and Bath as well as Ulster.
Yeah, I mean it's obviously been a bit of a disrupted year this year because of that weird like two game pool stage, and then it's almost not obviously you have to win your game. It's almost like luck of the draw to get into the knockout round. But I mean, Tigers got to semi final last year, obviously lost to Toulon, which is no disgrace. This year, I think it's a good mark of if they can go on and win the tournament. It's a good mark of I think for say how well they've come under Borthwick this last year and a half because they were a club they were in total free for. I'm convinced had they not maybe had say Borthwick in charge, if they're in the same old regime, and nothing against Jordan Murphy, I think obviously he's a wonderful, like a legend of the club. But I don't think it was necessarily up to him. I think it's the above's. I think that the whole top to bottom from boardroom down, it was a club in trouble, and they seem to have stabilised. Maybe giving Borthwick too much credit, but he's what's changed. The recruitment policy's got better. Say better younger players have come in. So I can say without that Borthwick change and relegation not being a thing this year, it would not surprise me to see Tigers rooted to the bottom of the table and genuinely the unthinkable staring at the abyss of relegation. Because you assume they're one of those clubs that they're not going to fail in the championship. They're going to come straight back up. But it would have been so embarrassing to get rid of. It might have been the kick up the arse they needed. Obviously, they seem to have stabilised anyway. Hopefully, if they keep improving like they are doing, because like you say, it's not because the decline started years ago. People risk of making this a Tigers episode. We'll probably do a Tigers episode in the future, but the decline started well before they started like losing. Like they were rubbish, but finishing top four still and creeping into like semi, obviously getting to playoffs, getting to finals, but they really were dire to watch. They were boring and they were hated by across the league by everybody. and they got what, and then eventually the results stopped happening. They just dropped down the league and they started losing games. But they say even in defeat this season, they've been better to watch and they've got better and it's promising. I was very, very pessimistic about Leicester, I would have said like 6 months ago. Now it seems they're taking the steps in the right direction. So it's quite exciting, really.
Great. Yeah, well, that was a really good recap of the European stuff, man. Interesting things and takes there for sure. I mean, you know, this is always the exciting bit when it gets to semi-final time and final time. So hopefully we'll see some good games and then some good finals, that sort of finals weekend in around May, June time, whenever it exactly is, I'm not sure off the top of my head. But yeah, we can't wait for that. Just a few more little headlines. Obviously, Women's Six Nations. Didn't really get a chance to watch too much again, you know, but from what I saw of the scorelines, England are pretty strong. I think it'd be very surprising not to see the Red Roses win another Grand Slam. I think that's probably the expectation and probably the bookie line at the moment. If you're looking at the betting odds, that probably is the most likely outcome. Italy women seem to have maybe taken a bit of a backward step. I don't know how badly they've been impacted by COVID because they're a much less professional setup, I think, compared to England and the others in and around the British Isles. So, you know, I think they've probably been impacted quite heavily with regard to training ability and stuff like that and support that they're getting. But, you know, it looks like there. And I think Wales taking a bit of a beating as well from Ireland women. That's a big step for Ireland women, I think, because, you know, Ireland women have probably been third or fourth best for a while now. They look like they're maybe going to step into that top two or top three of the Six Nations now. You know, so that's a really good step for them. I think England versus Ireland will be a very tasty encounter.
I saw that. I was surprised to see it be that heavy. I know, obviously, not been the most avid follower of women's rugby. Keep an eye on it, but normally it's England have won the Six Nations or France, because England and France are by far and away the best two teams in it. I didn't expect Ireland to win by that much. I know, because Wales normally not terrible. But like I say, it's a strange thing with women's rugby, because the professionalism is so mixed between the countries. Obviously, England are probably the most professional. But yeah, to see Ireland do well, like you say, I mean, because they hosted the last Women's World Cup, I mean, that must have spurred them on a little bit because they performed pretty well there. They've got better, it seems. But 45-0, I mean, it's international rugby. It's a very, very good result to nil somebody in this day and age. Yeah, good on them. It's good to see teams improving. You want, it's always the problem, I think, with women's sport, as we spoke about it last week, with the professionalism being the mix, where it's almost, it's just not a level playing field. So you can't, like you say with Italy, you can't draw too much. Okay, England have smashed them, but I mean, how much of the Italian women are they getting week in, week out training the same way as the England team are? Probably not. At least not like the same focus level. They might be very committed, like professionals in their own amateur way or semi-professional way, but they're not getting that on-pitch time. So, and it's the same, I think, with the outside of England. I don't know what the deal is in France, actually. I'll have to look into that, really. But,
yeah.
So, you don't want to say there's, I can say, an unequal game, but it's England-Ireland shaping up to be quite a big game. I think they've changed the format. Is it two groups? And then they're playing, I think they've got a final, so I'm not sure who will be in that. But we probably should have researched that before the show, but never mind.
Yeah, well, these things get clarified in time, Dave. There's nothing like hindsight or foresight in there, is there, a little bit, when you're halfway through something. But yeah, look, that'll be really interesting when it gets to that sort of final stage then. But yeah, I don't think you can really look past England at the minute. They look like in the best sort of form, and obviously the infrastructure's there now to make sure that they can train year round. And despite COVID coming in, well, they've obviously kept that level of professionalism and commitment in place to be able to do that. So fair play, and the domestic league shaking up, shaping up pretty well. So last couple of headlines, obviously a bit of a dark week in the world, really, Dav. You know, it's obviously sad when anyone passes on, but when that people, you know, when those people are celebrities, it's more impactful. So I just thought it'd be fitting just for us to mention, obviously, the end of this week, a bit of reflection. Obviously, we've lost a member of the royal family this week in, you know, His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh. Obviously, no matter what you think about the royal family and stuff like that, you know, he definitely did a lot of good things for the country, brought in the Duke of Edinburgh Award. And, you know, that's changed a lot of people's lives. We know a lot of people through school who did that kind of thing. And that sort of, you know, adds something to the CV and really helps people get going in their lives. And, you know, also to lose a couple of cult heroes in there, you know, DMX sort of passing on, as well as Nikki Graham, who was famous for being on Big Brother, giving it the old "Who is she?" I don't know if you remember that, Dave. Do you remember in the diary room? She had a bit of a freak out.
I know that freak out. I didn't know she died as well. That's genuine news.
Yeah.
Where she died from?
What? Complications related to anorexia. You know, she'd had a lot.
Oh, God, that's horrible. I didn't know that. Oh, that's awful. Well, anyone has to struggle for that thing. The heart goes out to. So I only know her from that. Who is she? Who is she? But no, I didn't know that. That's very sad news. Like you say, with the Prince Philip's death, when I found out, I think like most people, sort of wasn't really too surprised. Without getting too much into politics, sort of, I wouldn't say I don't hate the royal family. I'd probably rather we didn't have one. But like you say, you cannot argue that he did a lot of good. I didn't realise quite as much, like, the extent to the good work he did, like you say, with the Duke of Edinburgh Award. But he was quite, in terms of his conservation work, and for someone who's, I guess their life's quite controlled in the position he has, tried his best, certainly, to do quite a lot of good in the world. And then, say, on the day, probably DMX probably hit me a little bit more. I know he had been a bit of trouble recently, not long, I think, been out of prison, like literally a few months. Obviously, he had a drug overdose and a heart attack, and he's been in hospital. But I mean, I suppose there's not a rugby club in the world, I don't think, that hasn't had X gone give it to you on the change room before the game. So it is a sad one. So it's something of a cult hero, isn't he, really, DMX? I mean, I don't agree with a lot of his homophobic lyrics, But I do agree with his work hard and stand up for what you believe in lyrics. So, and by all accounts, with apart from the crimes, quite a nice bloke.
I think, you know, I think this whole week has shown the whole spectrum of, isn't it? You know, from a reality TV star to a rapper who's had a turbulent life to, you know, a person who lives in what many people would consider to be one of the most privileged positions in the world. You know, all from different angles, all have different lives, but you know, there's always a bit of good that people do despite their challenges. And yeah, a terrible shame, like we said, when anyone passes on. So thoughts going out to people involved and close to those people. And obviously a state of national mourning, you know, a lot of minute silences before games this week and such. And I believe there'll be black armbands and stuff like that donned in the coming weeks. So, you know, not much more to say, I guess. Just thought it'd be worth us acknowledging those things, because it's quite a sort of turbulent week, really, with those kind of things coming in. And obviously, there's a lot of changes to COVID and all that kind of stuff. You know, the measures are changing again this week. So it's really just been there, which kind of leads me on to my next point, actually, and final sort of headline-y kind of thing to just discuss. You know, seen some articles circulating around this week regarding things like COVID passports. They're perhaps bringing in sort of COVID passports or certificates for stadium access to games. So the RFU, as well as the FA and a couple of other organisations, have backed that kind of bill with the government. So potentially you could be looking at having to have a sort of COVID passport in order to be able to attend, you know, games to show that you've had a vaccine and stuff like that, which doesn't, I mean, the whole idea of the vaccine kind of passports, that doesn't really sit well with me anyway, because, you know, it's kind of a fallacy. We all know that the vaccine doesn't stop you from getting the virus. It just increases your likelihood of recovery and, you know, reduces the risk of death from it. So it's a little bit of a fallacy, really. I imagine, you know, the spread may be reduced and stuff like that, but just to show that you've had the vaccine shouldn't automatically qualify you to go into the ground, because you may have had your vaccine, but 2 days later you could go and lick a counter somewhere if you're a bit inclined to do that kind of thing and get the germs anyway. So it seems a bit of a fallacy to me, Dave. I don't know what your point of view is.
It doesn't sit well with me, because I mean, the whole idea, like, you need a passport to go anywhere in the public, I appreciate why, but it's a bit authoritarian, bit draconian in my mind. But also, you can't like choose to have the vaccine everybody yet. Obviously we're a younger demographic, we can't go and have it unless, well, neither of us are immunocompromised, so we can't just choose to go and get it. So say you're let's European finals in May or June, whenever they are, say they, oh, as many people can attend providing you've had a vaccine, but they haven't rolled out to our age group yet. We can't go, for only the reason that it's not quite fair. I mean, I think I'm not one of these people who thinks the vaccine isn't real. Like, go and have a vaccine if you can. Like, it's not, I don't believe that Bill Gates can control you afterwards or any of that nonsense.
Why are you wearing that tinfoil hat then?
Oh, I always wear this. What are you on about? So Major League Baseball can't read my thoughts. Like, it's common knowledge, you idiot. Why aren't you wearing one?
I completely agree with you, man. Look, from one side of the thing, I just desperately want anyone to get back in stadiums, and if I can't, then fair enough. You know, whether that's if you haven't got the money to go or whatever, then, you know. But I want people to get back in general, because I want sports clubs to get, you know, better fund. I want them to get the money flowing back themselves and stuff like that. But yeah, the actual sort of measure of it just seems a bit of a fallacy, in my opinion. So yeah. I'm glad we're on the agreement there that, you know, we're all for getting people back in and doing what we need to do. But at the same time,
can't wait lighten the crowd up a little back. Bit. Yeah, I want to get the crowd back to get rid of that fucking fake noise they have on the telly. It pisses me off. I know you can't, only some things you can have it without the stadium noise as well. You have, like, or the fake noise. So it is irritating when you have to listen to it. I don't like it. It's, yeah.
I'll tell you what, do you know what's annoyed me, Dave? The atmosphere, actually, with the sort of speakers and stuff like that, is better than most rugby crowds in general. So actually, I was a little bit offended by that. We've made rugby look like it's better than it is.
Well, if you listen to this and you're a regular attender of Premiership games, go and make it an atmosphere. Take a megaphone, a few flares, and get the atmosphere going. I don't know, what, other than setting fire to something and shouting.
Brilliant. We're not advocates of anarchy, but yeah, no, that's just sort of like the main headlines in show there. You know, not too much else happening this week, really. Just obviously the European Games and, like I said, these COVID passports. And that is, I think there's going to be a lot of these kind of things thrown around in the coming weeks and months until we actually get some solid plans in place. You know, we've got this roadmap, but I guess it's the details between each sort of stage of that, isn't it now? Like, do we bring in a vaccine passport? Or does that alienate people like ourselves, like you've mentioned, who might not have access to that vaccine for an extended period of time? It might be even next year. We don't know. Who knows? Do you know what I mean? But, yeah, you know, things are moving forward anyway. And as of tomorrow, you can go and enjoy a nice cold beer in a beer garden. So, yeah, enjoy that if you're a big Monday drinker.
Yeah, well, we probably agreed to do 90 days sober. Can't now anyway, but I can in spirit enjoy the idea.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, these bars might be doing a non-alcoholic beer. Never know. Never know, Dave. Time a couple of cold ones after work.
True. Well, to be fair, now, if it's not got alcohol, I can have as many as I like after work and just drive home still. So.
Exactly.
That's good.
Exactly. Unless you're incredibly suggestible, someone who's like easily hypnotized or something like that, and you have like three non-alcoholic beers and somehow your body just thinks you're pissed and you just end up crashing into a tree. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Learn yourself. If you know that you're suggestible, don't go drinking alcohol-free beers and then go and drive, okay? Get a cab home still. You're untrustworthy and unstable. Yeah, I mean, have you got any other headlines? I don't think there's anything else, you know, nothing else big's happened anyway. I know we've got a bit of a kind of tiptoey topic that we'll be going over today. After the last week, you know, we spoke about the women's game a lot, and there's kind of a sort of a touchy subject, I guess, something that we've been not avoiding with a bar trial, because we're not worried about offending people for what we, you know, sort of believe in. We're not going to go out there and be horrible to people, are we, Dave? But these topics sometimes like that we're going to cover today, obviously the transgender athletes in rugby, as well as sport in general, is kind of a touchy subject, especially for one, you know, two people who don't fit that demographic talking about it from an outside kind of view. But yeah, I mean, it's a big headline, I guess, isn't it, really? And something I think after last week, we felt we needed to kind of address a bit more.
Yeah, I think I can't think of anything else extra for this week. Obviously, that last week, a bit of magic of the editing going on here. What we actually did was record this last week, during the last week's episode. So at some point in the next sort of minute and a half, I'll edit it seamlessly and we'll just start talking. But no, it's a really big issue. And like you say, it's something that's easy to avoid and not talk about it. And I think that's the worst thing to do. I think you've got to have all parties on this issue sort of work out what is the best way. Ultimately, the goal, is, I think, as well, has got to be how to get transgender people playing rugby as well. I think some people probably look at it from, oh, they don't want trans people playing, or trans people shouldn't be able to play. And I think that's not really in keeping with what rugby is about. Obviously, rugby is about, it's a game for everybody. What is the safest way to get those people, to get transgender people into playing rugby? And, you know, is it, you know, I guess the way it leads with the most dignity as well. From, we'll go on to talk about it. I'm not sure if having assessments from several different, but obviously you've got to have all the psychological and medical assessments to get even into transitioning, to then have to go into have this or like a risk assessment done by the RFU. It seems a bit unfair, but I mean, it's a step in the right direction. We'll get some actual transgender people with a hat in the ring to get back to us after this episode and give us their perspective. But I think it's a big issue, and shying away from this issue does nothing, and leaving it to people, I think the RFU are probably the least equipped to deal with this kind of thing, let's be honest. So I think you've got to have the conversation with people it affects to get it going anywhere. Because it's going to happen, I think.
Absolutely, man. And yeah, just you know, as Dave's mentioned, the amazing seamless transition is going to happen now. A bit of a hot topic issue, though, hot button issue, if you will, is, and it's something that I think is important for us to cover because it is poignant in women's rugby. I mean, a lot of women's players I know have brought this topic up to me, and we've had discussions about it. Is the sort of topic around transgender players playing in women's rugby. So that would be people who have transitioned from male to female and then playing in the female game, in the women's game. The RFU, I mean, just to sort of give a bit of context, is the RFU have actually put out a proposal, like a general proposal this week. So the RFU have proposed a sort of risk assessment criteria for transgender women players based upon the height and weight. So if they come over this height or weight sort of standard, then it will be up for a risk assessment. So this player individually would be assessed to see if it is viable for them to play with women or not. And just to give you context, Dav, the proposed transgender policy, would fix the limit at 170 centimetres in height and or 90 kilos in weight or above. So for a bit of context on that, because obviously our listeners are listeners, they're not viewers, they can't see us. I myself am about 175, give or take, maybe give myself 177. There you go, 177, give me a bit extra. And I walk around about 88 to 90 kilos, depending, you know, how many beers I've had and how many burgers I've squandered down that week. But, you know, roughly between 85 and 90 kilos is my weight. So that would be myself playing against women based on size. You know, obviously, I know we'll discuss physiological differences, biological differences in a minute, but that's the kind of framework to give you a bit of context. So that's that. And if they come over this limit, they would either have they'd have an assessment to see whether that player would have a material performance advantage, quote, as the RFU are calling it, over other participants, or if there is a safety risk to other participants. Now, such a fucking difficult one, isn't it? Because
it is a minefield.
I mean, initially, just thinking about that point, ignoring everything for 1 second, just looking at the size things, I'm 5'8", and I play against guys, and I've played against guys who are 6'5", got 35, 40 kilos on me, and that's standard. So it's difficult with regard to that initially straight away, because there will be women playing who are 6 foot plus and weigh 17 plus stone. They weigh 110 kegs plus, playing against girls who are 5'7", 80 kilos on their best day.
Yeah, it seems almost arbitrary. I know they've said it's based on 90% of cisgender women, which to me, that's not what you're comparing it. It's a difficult issue, just generally speaking. The whole, like you say, with the transgender people, from what I gather, to my knowledge, neither of us are transgender. Nope. I'm not. From what I understand, I don't think they are treated fantastically by the system, if you will, in this country, in terms of access to medical care, in terms of, you know, like administration. I think they have quite a hard time with things. It seems to me like this, maybe not 90 kilos, but certainly taller than 5'7", is going to probably be a lot of trans women that are going to then have to have an individual risk assessment.
And what's that going to look like?
Well, that's
how hard you hit a tackle bag.
Yeah, it says here that we ask
bench press.
They're going to be asked to provide details on their previous sporting background. To me, that's almost irrelevant if you're a sporting person or not. Like, there's a guy, well, not a girl, but they were a WWE wrestler, wrestled as a man for a while, and they've transitioned post-retiring. I can't remember the woman's name now, but what the guy wrestled as when he was in the WWE, when she was a man, sorry. This is going to get us in trouble just by me trying to explain this last sentence. Does that matter if they say that they are, you know, or if they're a woman, if they're a trans woman, then why should that be a barrier to them playing sport if they're not going to be allowed to play men's sport, or they won't want to play men's sport? It seems strange to me. I don't think that's necessarily relevant. I appreciate there is obviously a safety concern, but do you want to label individual people that they need a risk assessment?
Yeah,
you're unsafe to be playing these people. I think trans people have a tough time of things in this country, certainly. I'm not sure what it's like in the rest of the world.
But what do they do then? What do they do then if they're told that you're unsafe to play? And look, I'm actually, it's going to get me in trouble, I'm a little bit against it, because I'll be honest, from my knowledge background of physiology, I understand, and we'll go into this side of it in a second, we're just looking at this first point. I understand why it's an issue. And like I've said, I've spoke to a lot of girls, and the general vibe I've got is, like, fuck, would I want someone your size running at me and bouncing me off? Or like, fuck, I'd want someone 6 foot who has been a man until the age of 23, 24, who's then transitioned with all that testosterone year build up and that growth and that advantage that puberty brings for men in physical attributes and stuff like that, all of a sudden turning up and playing against me and coming off at me off the back of a scrum and smacking me at 10 when I'm trying to kick the ball or something like that. I understand it from both sides. I'm a very empathetic guy. I really do. But I just think, looking at it from the side of a person who's transgender right now, well, what the fuck do I do if I'm told that I'm too risky to play with what I identify as now, what I feel like I am? That must be shit.
It's got to be. I mean, I think the whole process is probably quite degrading as it is. I know, like, you need to have, like, years of, like, mental or psychological, I can't remember the word, like, not tracking, but, you know what I mean? Like, you've got to be, it's like, I think it's 2 years you've got to be, like, have a psychiatrist say that you're not just making it up just to even, like, then get the treatment to transition. So then say you've gone through all that, you want to go and play a sport that you have either previously loved or really want to get into playing, or say you transitioned 2 or 3 years ago more or plus, and you've decided you want to get into playing now, and you're then told, no, you're too big. Or, you know, you're a threat to the other players, you're dangerous to the other players, and then you've got to have what could be quite a degrading process to decide that. It isn't good. I think this whole issue of transgender sports people and mainly sports women, I think because it says here transgender male players will just be asked to sign a declaration that they understand the risks of playing men's rugby. That's fine. I guess they're the ones putting themselves at risk. If you're spent 20 years of your life as a woman, you've then transitioned to be a man, you're going to be probably like a good 5-6 inches shorter than everybody, probably going to be a lot lighter than everybody, the best in the world. So I guess, but like you say, it's the norm. Somebody your height, I know you're probably stockier than your average little man, but
good
again,
choice. Good choice of words to have.
You're playing against like 6'7" behemoths who weigh 140 kilos charging at you, like you face that same risk, I guess.
Yes, so that's what it is. That's the difficulty for me in that. Now, putting myself in the shoes of a women's player, it's already, you know, you've already got a lot of shit against you in some ways. You've already got blokes ogling you from the sideline and stuff like that. It just feels like another problem, I guess. It's like, fuck, now I'm going to have to deal with someone who was literally maybe playing. I mean, is there going to be limits on standard that you played at? Like, imagine if you're playing that too last season and you've finally been able to accept yourself and you've come out, you know, as a woman, you've gone through the transition period for the last couple of years, you've had 2 years out of the game, say, or something like that while you're transitioning. But like, the last ever you played was like National 2. You're playing for like a National 2 club and you were a good player, a very decent standard. Now, all of a sudden, you're just dropping into like a Sunday women's team. There's so many things to consider with it. And I think this is why. But this is the issue that I take with World Rugby. And let's take a fucking jab at them again, because they've just said no. And I understand that again, because there is a lot of stuff to consider. But why not consider it? Like, let's not be afraid of this minefield, man. Let's delve into
it
a little
bit. Well, I think that's kind of what we've tried to do, or plan with this podcast, is let's not shy away from these issues. This is a pretty big hot potato to jump into. We could probably end up doing an episode of this in itself if we had the forethought. But it was in the news this week. I mean, first and foremost, you've got to remember that, like, trans people are people. They have feelings. Yeah. Like you say, if you're a trans woman looking at this and you know, like, I'm 6'2", I'm like 108 kilos at the minute. If I go in, say I transition to be a woman and in like a couple of years' time, okay, I'm going to lose a bit of muscle mass, probably a bit of pace, a bit of strength from being like estrogen treatment, et cetera, et cetera. But I've still got 20 years of men's rugby experience, or at least like 7 or 8 years of senior men's experience. So I am used to a different kind of rugby. Like, I'm used to playing a game of rugby where, like, you're at the bottom of the ruck and you just punch someone in the face because it's funny and it's part of the game. And I don't think that happens in women's rugby. Like, Am I safe to then go and play women's rugby that way? Let alone the fact that I'm probably taller and stronger and bigger than most of the girls anyway. I don't know, but
Yeah, there's always that argument, isn't there? That you go, oh well, you know, anyone could just like say that they're a woman now and play and stuff like that. And do you know what? Like, we have seen it in sport. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to dance around. We've seen it in sport. We have.
Yeah.
We have, and we have definitely seen it in sport. And I'm going to call out cycling. I'm going to call out weightlifting. Now, whilst I abhor that kind of thing because it means that good, hardworking women who aren't trying to cheat have been had. Things ripped away from them. Olympics, we're talking here, levels have ripped away from them. You're not getting hit in the head with a shoulder, potentially. You're not getting punched in the face like if you were fighting. You're not getting wrestled to the ground as if it was wrestling. This is a different kettle of fish we're talking about here. And this is where I lead on to my view on it as a physiologist. You know, that's my background in physiology and stuff like that is, you know, there's some great things out there. And there's a really good infographic on Science for Sport, which is an Instagram page. They've kind of put it in a nice little bottle thing. And I quite like talking about things like this because it makes it easier instead of me sitting here citing off, oh, well, read Johnson and Johnson, 1974, and this will tell you. This puts it really nice and easy. And this is based upon MMA athletes. So testosterone, males throughout their growth period through puberty and stuff like that, and in general have around 15 times more testosterone than women. Females produce on average 162% less power in things like punching than men do. Reactive strength is around 33% lower in females in general. Cardiovascular fitness, females tend to put around 33% less blood per heartbeat. And upper body strength, you know, is 44% greater in males compared to females, and bone density is around 10% higher in males than in females. Now, that's looking at elite sort of MMA fighters and comparing that kind of thing, but that gap's going to be even bigger then because, you know, men in general, untrained men and untrained women to a regard, which is what we can call amateur athletes in general, is going to be bigger. That gap will naturally just be bigger anyway, because typically, stereotypically, men tend to lift weights more than women in general anyway. Yeah. So, and stuff like that. So you're going to have that problem there. So just looking at that argument about people who've transitioned, that those physiological things, yes, whilst might not be there on that day when you play them, your estrogen levels are going to be higher. You will now have breasts. You will now have longer hair. You won't have any facial hair, etc. You know, even though some women do have facial hair sometimes anyway, it does happen. We've seen it out there. You know, fair play, they can grow a better beard than I do. I've still not hit puberty. I'm 25. I'm struggling. I can't get more than a tash. You know, you have that, yes, on this day, it is at this level, but you've had 18 years of that advantage, let's call it an advantage, prior to that point, which is going to mean it. So that's why I back this idea of a risk assessment to a degree, because it's not just that you're in and play. Because look, like I say, we play and we've played against guys bigger than us, and you hit people and you get fucking bashed about left, right and centre. Like whenever I line up against a 6'4" Fijian bloke, I'm like, fuck, in the centres. I'm like, oh God, I'm like absolutely done over here and stuff like that. That's the feeling everyone always gets. I'm going to get out-skilled, out-paced and absolutely bashed because he's going to Fijian sidestep into me and do me in. But that's my choice. It's not a female's choice to play against someone who's transgender. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm trying to say? It's you can't force it upon them, but then you kind of get to a point where then women will be scared to say, I don't want to play because they'll look like a bigot. And this is the problem nowadays. People probably look at me and call me or you a bigot now because of what we're saying a little bit about it. But this is facts. Those numbers I've just said there are facts from real scientific research. Yes, at elite level. But that's at elite level. These are women who train at elite level as well. So imagine what the difference is going to be in the minefield of amateur and semi-pro sport. So it's really difficult. And I think it's just about managing it. Again, it's about managing it.
I think it's very, let me say, it is a minefield. It's very, very tough to decide. I mean, I am of the school of thought that certainly rugby is for everybody. Like to paraphrase the militant black guy from the cult Channel 4 hit Balls of Steel, rugby for everybody, motherfucker. everyone should be able to play. And it, like, okay, transgender people should have a place to play. And if trans women, that's going to be in the women's game. I think, let's be honest, certainly in England, which is obviously the RFU, and in this country, you have to go through quite a rigmarole to transition in the first place. You realistically, if you've reached that point, you're probably going to be serious enough about it that you're not doing it just to smash some women about playing rugby.
Yeah, and I don't think that here. So much, no.
But And you get, whenever you hear this discussion, there's always like the two, you almost never ever get the two extremes of the argument, where you get someone saying like, oh no, it's just blokes in dresses playing women's sport. It's not, it's unfair. They shouldn't do it. And then you get someone saying, no, like trans women are women, you know, women is trans women's equal rights.
They automatically should get every right and privilege. Like,
and if I'm being honest, I probably lean more toward that second thing, but I appreciate it's naive to think that just saying, oh, you say you're a woman, you can play women's sports, because there are people who do it for a, you know, just their own personal gain, to like their ego, to say, oh, I'm the best in the world, even though, you know, I physiologically have an advantage.
We have to accept there are psychopaths out there.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's actually, me and my brother had a discussion on this, because he was talking about like steroids in sport, and how like he could 100% believe that most professional sports people would take steroids given the chance if they knew they were going to get away with it. Because like how people just act in real life who aren't athletes, like people cheat to get ahead at work, etc., or just dickheads at work and they'll screw people over in like their shit job day to day that doesn't really matter that much. So if you get a chance to get an advantage in sport, you will. So there's going to be people out there who go, well, I can't quite crack it at this level as a bloke. I'll transition and dedicate their life to it just to win. And yes, that's a worst case extreme scenario, but it's probably going to happen. And you've got to, well, how do you stop that happening? Because, or can you stop that happening if you're going to say, well, trans people have a place to play? Do you bar them from the elite level of the game?
But well, then, no, because that's probably where they'd be more suited.
Yeah, maybe.
If they have got the advantages of being a male before a certain age, that's probably where they're going to have the advantage. And I think I worry more for Sunday League girls who are just playing the game for the love of it. And this is another thing that is going to make rugby perhaps unattractive for women already, who maybe have got children, who have got a 9-to-5 job, which, like you've mentioned, you know, which we mentioned before, it's maybe harder for women to get ahead in anyway. They're having a shit week at work. They're maybe getting ogled at work or whatever. Rugby's like their one place to go and feel power and feel completely in control of what they're doing and what's going on in their life. And now to have something which, I mean, if the RFU were saying there's a need for a risk assessment, there is an issue there. If there was no issue there, there wouldn't be this whole discussion. But yeah, play straight away, not a problem. So there is something there to concern ourselves with. And that's the issue with it, unfortunately. It definitely is a concern. It's not like people are just being bigots and saying this can't happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is not like apartheid or anything like that, where people are just bigots straight up and they're racist or whatever. This is not people being transphobic, as it's called, or anti-transgender. This is about people being considerate of all sides, because let's, you know, women are human beings as well. They have rights to be safe in the game they play. 100%. And back to my original point, rugby's not a safe game. It's not.
No, but that is always important to remember. It's regardless of, say, whatever, you know, sex you are born with or what gender you identify as, and if you've transitioned to, you're putting yourself at risk. You could be a trans woman who used to be a 6'5", you know, 130 kilo number eight, transition to play women's rugby. You could still get injured. You still get a shoulder to the face, knocked out. Like, it is a dangerous game. There's not, yes, sure, you're going to have an advantage if you would just have that frame, but
there's no definitives just to say, because you're big, you're going to be amazing, but it's more likely. And that's what they've got to consider here. And I like that they're thinking about it.
I think it's positive that they've said they're going to do this and trial this, because I think, like I say, rugby is for everybody. There needs to be a place for people. And, you know, trans people, they are often an afterthought, sometimes at best, and then outright discriminated against at worst, and treated with a real lack of respect and dignity. And so then there needs to be, there's a balance somewhere. And I mean, hopefully, like, we've talked about some of these issues as people who aren't really qualified on either a risk assessment level or a transgender issues level. But
no.
If you are listening and you are transgender, or you know someone who is transgender, then, you know, tell them to have a listen and point out where we've been right, where we've been wrong.
Well, just give us your 2 pence on it, because, like, you know, we want to get your experience, because we're both pretty empathetic guys, and we've been empathetic, I think, to the both sides of this coin, both to the existing female players and the transitioning female players coming in. We've tried to have that sort of down the barrel look at both of them and see where they're both coming from. And it's difficult, man. It really is. I think and again, I don't really have a fix for it. You know, the libertarian in me sort of just wants to go, yeah, you know what, just let them play. And, you know, rugby's risky, man, it is. And fuck it, you're going to get headshots and it's going to happen. You're going to get hurt. Blah. And if they're bigger, then you've got to go low, you know, and all that, like those easy sort of quick fixings in your head. But, and then another side of me goes, well, how many trans players are there?
It's going to be, it's going to be minimal.
Is it significant enough? Is there more than 50?
But
you know, if there's more than 50, and this is a problem again for me, like it, the easy fix is to go have your own club. And this, that's going to sound so exclusionary. I don't mean it to. I'm just thinking, for me, my attitude for things like that is, well, fuck you. If the RFU told me, oh, because you used to be a bloke, you can't play anymore kind of thing, I'd be like, well, fuck you, I'm going to start my own club. And we're all going to play together. And I'll tell you what, we're going to ask the women to play. And if they want to play, we'll play them. And I'll tell you what, we'll play a men's team. We'll fucking do it. And that's my personal attitude. I don't know if that's the attitude of people who are in that situation. But maybe, I don't know if that's a fix. I don't know if that's maybe an option. But obviously the problem is then is people are going to be spread all around the country and it's very difficult to make things like that work.
True. But I mean, I guess it's kind of that attitude. Like you say, that's a good attitude to have. Like if they ain't going to let you play, well, like, well, fuck them. You make them take notice. You make them let you play. Like, you do your own thing. You take them on. Because like I say, I mean, if they would say, we would play a men's team, like I would say, when I was at uni, my mate, when I was captain, and I made a point of saying, okay, we're going to have like a pride fixture. We're going to play one of the gay teams. We did that. It was a big success. Like I would be saying, like, if there was a trans women's team out there, so we were open to playing women's team and men's team, then I'd be putting my hand on, yeah, come on, play us. We'll give you a game.
Well, like, what you've got to remember, David, is we have played against female players before.
Back in the rugby. In the days, yeah.
Under 15s, Holland tour. We played at Gouda Rugby Club, and I lined up on the wing against a female. It was a girl. She wasn't transgender or anything like that. The rule out there was up until the end of under 15, up until under 16s, so till the end of under 15s, girls could play in the same team as guys. And that was the rule in Holland.
It was the same in France when we on that same tour. We played Lille, I think it was.
That was
shout out to the French person who listens to us every week.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had girls in their team. One of them.
Well, I remember that game really well. I remember that game really well. There was an earthquake that happened at Hilversum. It registered about 7.8 on the Richter scale from a young David Nurse.
Air Nurse coming in hot.
Air Nursey doing a Michael Jordan slam dunk esque dive over the try line. The posts fell down. I mean, they were not great posts anyway. Remember that? They're like football posts with like metal poles, like tied around them to make them into rugby goals for this tournament and all that. Big shout out to Hilversum RFC out there in Holland and Gouda, how you say it.
I believe it's Gouda in Dutch, but I don't speak Dutch, so I could have made that up. If you're Dutch or know how to speak Dutch, please let us know.
Brilliant. Do we have any listeners in Holland? Maybe, who knows? Well, you probably know. I don't.
We do not yet. But that's not to say people who listen can't speak Dutch.
If you can speak Dutch and you're a big fan of Huda, then let us know. But yeah, no, so we've been there. This is the point I make. So it does happen in the world anyway. And like, you know, it's just really difficult. I got nothing else to say on it, really. I think, you know, there's a few things there. And I guess it is difficult. If you're one of these players who is going to get excluded, yeah, where do you go? Do you have to play with men? Do you start your own club? I think that's probably what will happen. If someone does get excluded, they'll go, well, I'll start my own team. And I tell you what, more power to you. And I wouldn't be adverse to playing against you. And I know there's probably lots of women out there who wouldn't be adverse to playing against people who are trans either. But I think it's the issue is we need to respect the existing female players as well, you know, to a degree. And we need to respect physiology. Because my last point I'll make on it is this policy does also state that a trans woman's testosterone levels must be at or below a set level for a period of 12 months prior to application. I like the fact that they're doing it over 12 months because that's going to increase reliability and it shows that their estrogen's working and that they're not at man levels of testosterone. I'd air quotes there. That's not me being a bigot or anything like that. That is just how it would be termed by them, I guess, and what people would see it as. So it's good that they don't have a 12 months, but the issue with that is testosterone levels can go up and down like nobody's business. Without being crude, if you masturbate, that will drop your levels of testosterone massively. If you eat a big meal, your level of testosterone will crash. Not a lot of people know that kind of thing. So if I have like, if right before my test, I smash out burgers and a couple of chips
and a wank.
And a wank. That's going to drop my testosterone level. So it's you know, there's swings and we can pick holes in this whole thing the whole way around. But I think the fact they're doing it over 12 months will give some stem of reliability to that. But on my angle, what I know about is physiology and stuff like that. And I just think the lasting effects of puberty is going to be difficult. Now, maybe for someone who started their transition at the age, which we have seen, not so much in this country, in America, happens a little bit more at the age of 13, 14. So by the time they're 18, they've basically not had a male puberty. That will just be a lot easier. I think for people who've transitioned later in life, this is going to be more difficult. Yeah. And I'll tell you the sad thing about this is, and I'm going to sound like a little bit of a tough looker shit on you again, a little bit kind of guy, but it is a little bit tough look. I mean, the world isn't black and white. It's going to be tough for you. I'm sorry to say it. You're trans, the world is going to be more tough for you. And it's not because I want it to be more tough for you. It's just how it fucking is at times.
I mean, I guess it's quite the predicament.
And I'm sorry for that. And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie to someone and say it's going to, everyone's going to accept you straight. I haven't got a problem with you. And pretty much everyone I know doesn't have a problem with anything like that. And, you know, I know you don't for sure. And I welcome it. But I do have a problem with this physiological aspect of it. And that's where I stand on it. And that's why I think the risk assessment is a good idea in theory. But let's see how it plays out and how much damage it causes. I hope it doesn't cause too much damage for people, and there's an understanding that women need to feel safe as well. Yeah. That's especially poignant now. What's happened in the last month? You know what's happened.
Well, 100%.
You know, women need to feel safe on the rugby pitch as well as everywhere else. And it's I know for a fact that there's a couple I know. Just the last point on this. Shout out to Sam and EJ. She's like 5'2" and plays scrum half. And Sam, I think you've met Tebs, haven't you? He's like 6'3", massive. Might be rolling out for the 99s. He's made that promise. This I've put it out online now, so he has to play for us. really talented player, really big guy. And he sort of said, imagine if I fucking ran at her. And I get it. I get where people are coming from. So look, I don't mean to be insensitive, but that's just my viewpoint on it from my area of knowledge. If there's a difference of opinion in that, let's hear it. I'd love to hear it. Like Dav said, get in touch and talk to us, because we want to learn. We want to learn people's lived experiences as well as their fact and their truth. So, because I can only get so much.
A closing remark on this trans conversation is: if you are transgender, then you are welcome as a member of the 99s as much as anybody else is. Whether or not you're allowed to play is probably out of our hands, but you can certainly support us any way you can. Get in touch. Join in our conversations. You have a place. If you are transgender and a rugby player and like to be on the podcast, give us a bell.
Yeah, that would be great.
We'd love to speak to you. Or even if not on the podcast, just outside of it. Let us know what it's, how you see it, fitting in, what the future you think is for trans rugby players and sports people in general.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think we will find a place for anyone at the 99s, even if they want to literally just come and like hold the tea.
We need a cameraman.
That's a good shout. If you own a very good camera, it's just you constantly doing like your like fancy voice. Like, if you know anyone who is
I've got loads of fancy voices in my locker. You wait till you hear the opening sting, which I'll record separately.
Brilliant, man. And actually, last point on this, there is going to be an external consultation period on the policy, which will run until 5 p.m. on Friday, April the 16th. So I believe if you go, the RFU have said that. So if you go through the RFU website and have a look through the news and policies section, you might find something that you can maybe add to, or if there might be a webinar or something like that. I've not seen anything advertised. And I think people need to get involved in that discussion of both sides of the coin as well, because it's not really relevant for us to talk on that, I guess. But people who are involved, if you're trans or and interested in sport or just interested in the rights of trans people, get involved in that. And likewise, if you're a female player who's worried, get in and get some talk going. But arrivederci to that topic for now. I hope we've not offended. Actually, no, if we have offended people, I don't think we've said anything too horrible. So you're not offended by it, that's your problem.
I think,
we're not going to apologise, because we're not going to, the 99s does not apologise for how we feel.
Well, no, like I don't think we've made any outlandish points. If you are, say you're listening and you're transgender and you think we've been incorrect and possibly insensitive, then apologies for that. But I think we've been sensible and fair to both sides of this issue. It's not black and white. I mean, if you're offended because we've been pro-transgender, then fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a grip. Grow up.
Yeah. Right. Wow, it's time again for another MLR roundup, Dav. Obviously, big weekend of shocks, really. You know, I've, you know, sort of had the scores up and stuff. I've seen, you know, some of the little clips from the games and kept up to date with the scores and such. But yeah, pretty big weekend of shocks, really. I guess we'll go through our predictions, and that way we can go through each game in a little bit of detail, as we normally do. So first up, we had our friends, the LA Giltinis, or Giltinis, depending on how you sort of pronounce that. They were playing the Toronto Arrows, another team that's kind of sort of close to our heart. Damn, I mean, Rob was out there rolling last week, and he rolled some good results. They got a W this week. The dice just aren't playing ball by the look of it, Dav. The Giltinis running out pretty big winners against Toronto there in the end, 43-16.
I mean, it's not a shock. I mean, we both predicted this kind of result. Like we said, it's LA's first away game. If they didn't deal with travelling, like, obviously, quite a cushy gig they all seem to have got over there at the minute, obviously playing in literally like a world-class stadium. I think the USA Eagles probably would dream of playing there.
Yeah.
And the Giltinis get to do it every week. Obviously, Los Angeles is like a world-famous city. It's probably quite a cool place to go and live. And to get paid to play rugby out there, would they travel well? And it seems, yes, they will. They've battered Toronto away. I mean, 43-16, it's not a disgrace for Toronto to lose, but I think, like we say, Los Angeles, just expect them to just... I think it's going to take a real huge effort from a team to stop them. I think they've just got too much quality in relative to the rest of the league.
Yeah, you know... I think, you know, this week they just had real dominance up front. You know, the last couple of weeks they've shown that they've got the class on the outside edge, but I think this week they've gone and scored a pushover try. They've had a couple of, you know, tries from sort of pick and goes. So they've shown that they've got that tight game as well. So really they do look like the kind of all-round product. And I think that is because they've got some really good players throughout the team. They've not just got one sort of superstar. They've got, you know, Dave Dennis in the second row there, who's a great player. Then they've got obviously Gitto controlling things in the five half position, and they've got like some Billy Meeks and Adam Ashley Cooper as well, and Van der Merwe. You know, when you've got like six or seven world class players in a team, you do get that all round sort of performance, and that seems just to be what they're getting at the moment. So yeah, I mean, there's not too much more, I guess, to say on that. We both predicted, just looking at our predictions, we both predicted bonus point win for LA. So a point apiece there, Dave. So fair play, well done, sir, well done, congratulations. Next up, speaking of like big efforts, and he mentioned a big effort there to beat the Giltinis. Big effort from Austin, beating Nola away from home. Big turn up down in the bayou. It went down, Dav.
Yeah, I can only assume it's that differing thing. I think Nola had a decent start to season, then like a bit of bye week hangover. I think they've come in big. Obviously, they got a draw against DC on the opening weekend. Big win against New York before their bye week. They've had the bye and they've come in against an Austin team, which had a slow start, but a big derby win last weekend, and they had that extra game time. I mean, ultimately, these guys probably don't need a bye week this early into the season. They haven't had a pre-season, so they're all fresh. I think it's probably another week of development for Austin, maybe a stall in game readiness for Nola, and they've come up short. It's just pretty... By MLR standards, 18-15, it's a pretty low scorer. But I think Austin, I mean, last week they proved against Houston they've got a potentially like dominant pack that can really grind out a result. So, I mean, yeah, well done. Fair play to the Gilgronis. They've got the worst name in the MLR, but they've picked up a result there. And it's that point where it's quite early on in the season. It almost seems every week we change our minds as well. They could be in the playoffs, but it's about building that momentum, isn't it? It's not like a league table where you've just got to get in, like you've got to be consistent all the way through. It's just about getting that run to be the best team going into the playoffs. So is it six or eight going to the playoffs? But good result.
So it's their top. Yeah, it's top two in each conference. So they get their semi-final and a final for their playoff. So kind of like premiership larger, I guess. You know, so really it's just a case, I think we underestimated Austin a little bit. But I mean, having watched the highlights of the game, key moment sort of in the first half, Nola sort of losing possession on the outside edge. And literally a pick up and running against no one, like a scoop up and running the loose ball, you know, close to the posts, a guaranteed 7-pointer pretty much. That's what the turning point of the game has been, really. I know it was early on and it sort of put them back to 7-all, but it was just one of those ones in a tight game like that. Any sort of score like that is going to change the game. So Noel just looked a little bit, yeah, maybe a little bit fatigued, but in a weird way because they've had a rest. So, you know, just not being quite game sharp. But yeah, you know, we massively underestimated the Gil Gronies, Dav. So we both went for a Nola bonus point win and we've been well and truly made to look like a pair of meltons. So well done, Austin. You know, next up, big shocking game here. Really big shock for me as a kind of a Judas against the Sabercats. I actually went with San Diego in this one. Sorry, guys, our beloved guys down in Houston. I can only apologize for my deceitful nature and my turning my back on the guys. But the Sabercats have done the business at home, beating San Diego. Now, you know, I just fancied San Diego on the road, thinking that they'd get this win, and they've played really well. It's Chris Robshaw's first game. You know, not a great start for him, a losing debut. So, you know, fair play. But coming away with a bonus point for an away game is never bad. So I don't think San Diego will be too upset with that. And Houston getting a bonus point win at home after, you know, being nilled 2 weeks in a row, it's pretty bit much a, you know, big turnaround, really, isn't it?
It definitely. I mean, to go from drawing a blank for 2 weeks to then 34 points, yeah. I said to you, Z, you worried about the zero a couple of weeks ago. You said no. They get another zero, and you go, whoa. So we went a bit in depth last week about saying where they went wrong. I mean, I haven't actually seen the game, so I can't, you know, did they put our advice to practice? If so, they owe us money. But no, a big win. I say San Diego seem to be the nearly men of the league. It's, they get close. They just can't seem to quite get over the line. Again, another high scorer, which, you know, we like to see a tight game. See, 34-32 is a really good game of rugby. I think I went for a Houston win, I think. I backed them. I said they were going to bounce back.
You did, Dav. You did. You've edged me there. I could be going for another loss here at this rate. But, yeah, so, yeah, and just, you know, not too much to say about the game. They've just won it in a good shootout there. It's kind of a classic NFL sort of game where you score, we score. And Houston have just had a little bit of execution this week, which is what they were lacking. You know, the attack just seems to have a little bit more execution about it this week. So maybe you can just say two blips in a row, which you can't really have at this level of the game, but maybe that's just what they were. They seem to be back in a position now where they're going to win games. Maybe this could be the start of a little run and a playoff charge. Who knows? Yeah, but disappointing for San Diego with their guys. But Cecil Africa, I saw playing really nicely, set up a nice little try of a kick through. So good to see him playing well. And obviously great for Robshaw to get out there. And I'm sure he's had good fun and he's enjoyed it. So he's kind of in that space in his career now, isn't he? You know, those guys who are the elite players coming into the MR, just coming in and enjoying their games, really. Next up, we had Utah versus the Seahawks, and big turnaround for the Seahawks. You know, they'd gone sort of 0-2 and are really struggling.
Seahawks
of the NFL. Sorry, got my mindset on NFL for a second there. Seattle, the Seawolves, not Seahawks, not to be confused. Basically the same thing, but one of them's a fish, apparently. Yeah, big win for them away from home at Utah. And, you know, you fancied Utah here, Dav, but you've been shown.
I mean, in my defense, Utah did go 3-0, and Seattle did. I think they lost. They played two of them. They had a bye week last week, didn't they? Yeah. Maybe it's one of those again where it's the opposite effect of the bye. There, they've managed to put right what wasn't going well. I think you probably at this stage, you had a bad start. You prefer to have the bye than you had a good start, and whatever wasn't clicking, they can put right. Obviously, Seattle are a good club. They've won two out of two, like, finished MLR seasons. So then really struggle out the gate, obviously losing to Houston, which seemed like a good result for Houston the first day, but then they go scoreless. Sorry to rip it in again. For the next 2 weeks. You go, well, is that a really bad result for Seattle? But no, they've pulled out. Utah, obviously this week, finally, the scoring stopped. Only the 15, and they've gone down. Interesting, Utah, my mum did the... who's now listened, actually. So, hi, mum. She did.
Hi, Mary.
She did the MLR pick your team on our website. She got Utah this week, but obviously for my mum's first weekend with a hat in the MLR ring, and she's lost, unfortunately. So sorry, mum.
Is she converting to Mormonism, Dave?
Only time will tell. I'm not sure what the telltale signs of Mormonism are.
I think they're really nice, from what I understand. Stereotypically, they're very nice people. Possibly they have lots of wives, don't they?
Well,
they have like five wives.
I think that's more of a man thing. If my dad gets married to another woman, then I think it's illegal. Polygamy is illegal, but I don't know. We'll see. But maybe she will. I think we did say when we first talked about Utah, we wouldn't criticize the Mormons. We have done for, I think, the third week in a row. So sorry, Mormons. It's an important win for Seattle. They need to get that. We say the momentum is key. They need to build it, because if they're going to go for a three-peat, because it looks like it's probably not on the cards, but big win.
Yeah. If they're going to go for the three-peat, yeah, they need to go on the big, the big run now. This needs to be the start of something for them. But I just worry the fact that, yeah, you know, Utah have been good, but, you know, I just don't think that's, you know, Seattle have got the sort of firepower to keep up with the likes of LA and Nola. I know Nola have gone and lost today, but, you know, that I think that was more of an error-strewn game for them. But I just don't think they've got the kind of firepower to keep up with those teams. And to go and, you know, and lose the sort of opening two games as well just sets the kind of tone. But only time will tell. You know, we'll see how they go. This could be the start of a run for them. But, yeah, in that one, Dave, I took the win on that one. You went a bonus point win for Utah. I took the Seahawks. So I think that, what does that make it? That makes it 2-2. Going into the final game of the weekend, Rooney, Rugby United New York versus Atlanta Rugby. Now, we'll say how it went. Obviously, I backed Atlanta for the BP. Dav, you backed New York for the BP. So we're looking at the scoreline here, 27-17 to New York. So it's a second win in a row for you. The championship belt stays undisputed with Dav. So fair enough for that. Well played, sir. Good win for New York, by all means. I mean, you actually watched this one live, I believe.
I was going to, and then got distracted. I went for a run and cooked dinner. Kept an eye on the score, though. I will obviously watch it. I think, like we predicted last week, we both thought it'd be quite an open game. 27-17, decent scoreline. Atlanta, again, they look in defeat. Obviously, I've not seen the game, but the scoreline suggests they were in it. We sort of spoke about them last week as being dark horses, potentially. They just seem to be quite like a gritty team, always in games. So, it's a big win for New York. I will watch this one when I get a bit of spare time. Obviously, keep an eye on my boys down in the Big Apple. But it's a big win. Back to winning form. I think they're by again the bye week. Probably not a bad thing at this point. I know I contradicted myself earlier saying that it's probably what cost Nola this week, but or could have. But again, they had a bad game. We're going into the bye week. You can work that bit more prep time. And it's a big win. They get the bonus point. It's five on the board. I think because of that, they go from bottom of this conference to like second or top or something now because of how results have ended up going. I know you can't read too much of it because I had a bye, but it's happy. New York have got a good team. I expect they're a playoff team. I still think Los Angeles are the best team. I think this week, probably their first real, like proper test, an away game against a Toronto team that did well last week, sort of finally put, I guess, like the what they've got on paper into practice and won last week. This week again, and I'll say you batter them. I think if I was a predictor final playoff fight, I would go for Los Angeles versus New York, the big East and West Coast cities to go against each other. I'd like to be able to say New York would pull off the shock, but I think I wouldn't surprise me if Los Angeles go unbeaten this year.
Yeah, they look good. And you know, I think for Rooney in particular, just touching on that game again, 5 points on the road is so important to making the playoffs. You know, you've got to win all your home games, really, and you've got to be looking at a bonus point win for all your home games. But 5 points on the road is quite a rare occurrence, really, for any team, you know, except for, you know, obviously your dominant teams, you'd expect to do it. But, you know, New York to go to Atlanta and get a bonus point win is pretty good. So fair play to them for that. And yeah, I think, you know, I can't disagree with you at this point. LA are pretty much bolt-ons for the playoffs, for my opinion. And I'd like to think at this point, again, if I was putting money on it, it'd be going on LA to win the whole thing. And I think the Grand Slam, the unbeaten kind of tout you've given there is not ridiculous to say at this stage. And who knows? But I think, yeah, if they do get the chance to play a team like New York, I think that'll be a big test for them down the line. So I'd look forward to hopefully seeing that kind of game. You know, I'd like to see them also have a bit of a scrap with Nola, see them down at the Bayou. I think that'd be a really difficult place for them to go and win. And again, that would be a really good test to see where they're at. But yeah, no, overall, a pretty decent week. And I think this is what's shown the league, actually, a few shocks in there. It's kind of shown that this league isn't just cut and dry. This isn't just, you know, we've got a few big teams that are going to beat everyone. It's actually a very competitive league that's going to go back and forth. And the quality really is there.
I think every team as well has got that that bit of quality in it as well. It's any game you watch, you just see names you recognise. Like I said last week, I didn't quite realise the extent of the quality of the Gilgronis have got. Frank Halai has won, obviously All Black, you know, got two games or so, but you know, played a career as well for Super Rugby. So to see him, they've got Sebastian De Chavez of Leicester Tigers fame. I mean, he had like few caps off the bench, but he's still is a recognisable name. Some other decent players, and also they got some, especially the local talent as well. You see these guys who, like the local lads who are playing well in every team, and every game you watch, you just think, oh, these guys, it's not just the old stars who have come across or the names you recognise that are really playing well. A couple of weeks ago, when I watched New York lose to Nola. Obviously, New York's got a team full of recognisable names, and they got their asses handed to them by a Nola team, which is mostly homegrown. A lot of US talent in there, and they look good. And the big names for New York weren't the ones who were their best players. So it's a good mix in the league. It is exciting for the future, I think. I think in 3-4 years' time, we're going to see maybe a bit more of a fresher talent from overseas. I don't think it's going to be, you know, 37-year-old Andy Ellis's and 30-plus ex-pros. I think we're going to be like young guys who are maybe just not quite international standard. I think they'll leave their leagues. Like, there's probably loads of guys premiership level who go, want to give it a go, try something else. I think it's going to improve. And obviously the local talent's going to get better by just having that professional, sustainable, regular professional rugby as well. And I think it will grow. I think it will become so at least on par to like the Japanese top league as like another option.
Yeah. Very nice, Dave. Very well rounded off. I can't add anything more to that. It was very nicely put, very poetic, sir. Well done. Right. What we've got then, last thing we just got to do is just go through next week's games nice and quickly. Let's just go through the games. Let's shoot our suggestions straight away so we can record it. Hopefully I can wrestle the championship belt out of your hands. Otherwise, I'm going to have to try and cash in a money in the bank or something like that when you're not looking to steal the belt away from you. But yeah, because I'm hungover as well. We'll do this nice and quickly because I want to go to bed and sleep it off before the start of a Monday tomorrow. And you know, the trudge of going back to work, the old 9-to-5 ball and chain. So first up, kicking off, first off to start our weekend, we've got the Seawolves at the Arrows, Saturday 17th of April. Who you got in that one, Dev?
This is the toughest of the weekend, I think, to pick a winner of. It's not in Toronto, it's in Atlanta, but it's at Life University, wherever that is. They're a big rugby university. I don't know where it is, geographically speaking.
I forget off the top of my head, yeah.
I don't know. In theory, it's a home game for Toronto, but it's not really a home game. Seattle bounced back this week. That's a tough one. I'm going to go with heart and say Toronto. Rob Howley will keep the dice in the drain. He won't pick them up. He'll get them focused this week.
Okay. Well, do you know what? Yeah, do you know what? I fancy Seattle to carry on that form now. I think that's maybe the starting point for them. They haven't played badly against anyone. They just haven't been firing on all cylinders. And after this week just gone here, I think that they're at that level now. So, and I think Toronto as well just do seem to be too indifferent and too inconsistent to be able to say that they're going to be a definitive winner in any game. So give me Seattle for the road win. Yeah. No BP, just the standard road win.
I'm going to say BP because I think it's going to be a big points game. We're looking at like 50 or 40 odd. This is...
Really? Wow. Okay.
Points on the board for me.
Big promises, Dave. Big things to live up to. The guys in Seattle and Toronto, we've got a lot to live up to there then. Fair play. Next game, we've got the Free Jacks coming off of their bye week against Nolas. They're travelling down to the Bayou. Anyone travelling down to the Bayou is going to have a tough time. For me, I'm going to shoot this out straight away. Not too much to talk about here. I just think coming off the bye week, they're going to be a little bit groggy, perhaps. Like we've said, that seems to not have been very good for teams. They seem to be struggling off of the bye. So give me Nola goal for bonus point win at home against the Free Jacks.
Yeah. I look at it and I think Nola. They have played well. Obviously, they've not had a great week this week. But again, it's another week of prep. Free Jacks have had a bye. They might be a bit off it and Nola back at it. Surprised they're at home again, though. Have they even played away yet?
They've had a good home series, but maybe they're going to have to be stacked against them for the playoffs. Maybe they're going to have to do a lot of road games.
Again, I think at home, Nola have got some scoring in them. I think they're going to probably get home. Probably BP as well. So we're going to think.
All right.
Share our opinion on that one.
All right. Next up, Utah at the San Diego Legion. Both teams coming off a loss this week. Utah in the close loss against Seattle. And Houston, my beloved Sabercats, getting the big win over San Diego at home. So, difficult one to call for me. You know, I really wouldn't be surprised, honestly, to see perhaps a draw in this game, which sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but I'm not going to go for the draw. We always back a winner, but I wouldn't be surprised to see like a tight draw here, maybe something like a 34 all or something crazy like that. But I just think the quality they've had overall, and again, San Diego, a little bit like Toronto for me, just a bit indifferent. Give me Utah for the road win. BP.
Big news as well. I believe, I could be wrong, but San Diego are allowed to go back to San Diego now. So they're not playing in Las Vegas. I think it might be the first proper home game of the season. In which case, I think they're going to put a show on. Rob Shore in front of the home crowd. Oh, I think I quite like Utah, but I think there's a lot on the line for San Diego. They have been nearly in every game and have just been pipped. It can't happen 5 weeks in a row. So I reckon San Diego to finally get a win.
Nice. All right. Fair enough. Last
again,
couple games.
BP, because it's going to be a big score, I reckon.
Yeah. Last couple then. Giltinis at Houston. As much as, you know, my beloved Sabercats, I did go against them this week and it came out to bite me in the ass. But I am just going to have to say on this, just with my head, you know, my heart would love to say the Sabercats are going to carry on and win at home again. But yeah, I just don't think you can look past the Giltinis playing anyone. You know, they could literally be playing a championship team and you'd maybe fancy this Giltinis team to beat them because they've got such a good playing squad with international and world-class quality throughout. Yeah, Giltinis for a bonus point win on the road against the Sabercats. I don't think there's too much argument in that. I don't know what you think.
No, I can't. I can't see it going any other way. I'd like to be able to say that the Houston will give them a game. Maybe... from what I've seen of Houston, you've got to hope that they've either seemed to score a lot of points or just literally none at all. You've got to hope they're at least going to be out there to score some points this week, because if they perform like they did in the other games, they got no points against this Giltinis team, it could get quite one-sided. We could be looking at 80, 90 points to very few, which we don't really want to see as good as this Los Angeles team are. You've got to hope the best Houston team comes out, but I think it's going to be an almighty effort to stop Los Angeles getting a win and a bonus point win at that. So yeah, BP Giltinis.
Yeah, Yeah, I think it's difficult to score against this Giltini team just because they've got the ball so much, because they've such a good attacking threat with the players that they've got. So, yeah, I think it's difficult for any team to put a big score against them. I think, you know, the most they've probably conceded has been around 20, if that. So, yeah, Sabercats got a big job there. So, last two games, Atlanta at the Gilgronis. I think Austin have shown themselves to be really gritty and really tough. So, give me Gilgronis home win. With no bonus point. It's going to be a close game for me. Yeah, it's going to be a really close game.
Two pretty gritty teams. I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be a battle. That's one probably worth watching. Fortunately for us, it's the later kickoff. Mm. So it'll be a Sunday morning job to watch it. But I think that'll be a real, I say, physical battle. I say two gritty teams. I think Atlanta, I think they've been... good in the games they've had. I think they'll get over the line. Obviously, Austin had a big win this weekend, but they have got some talent in there, but I just think Atlanta are that good team. They're saying about the stars, they're just a good team. I think they can get over the line. They'll get back to winning ways.
Fair enough. All right, then.
No BP.
No BP. All right, last but not least by any stretch, because it's my good friend Dave Nurse's team, Rugby United New York at home again against Old Glory DC. Kind of a bit of a rivalry because they're quite close to each other. You know, it's Maryland versus the state of New York, kind of a bit of a interstate rivalry.
Yeah, it's an East Coast derby. A bit of a sort of like a... They've got three teams there, haven't they? They've got New York, DC and New England, sort of like a triangular sort of rivalry. I think DC have looked good in patches and then looked bad in patches. I can't go past my boys. I think Rooney will get the job done at home, especially. I think it'll be a bonus point. I think it'll be a good game, but I think New York have got that just sprinkling of quality that I think DC probably don't quite have, and I think it'll get them over the line. But DC have got some fire, actually. Like Tusa Tyler at scrum half looks like a nuisance, but I don't think he can do it all by himself. He can't go to New York and get the job done. Those boys are unstoppable at home.
Yeah, give me Rooney with a bonus point win at home. I just think, yeah, I can't look past what you've said there, really. You know, they've scored the bonus point win today at home. Just looking at form, you'd assume the same thing's going to happen again. I can't see past that too much. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Old Glory come away with four tries as well, because I do think Rooney's weakness is defensively a little bit. That's where they sort of lack a little bit in terms of their overall game. And DC, like you said, have got some firepower, so they can score. So I think it'll be an entertaining game. Good Sunday game, that is. I think that's a really good game for the Sunday show. So fair play. Looking forward to watching that for sure. So we've got our predictions in there. So that's good. We're locked in for next week. Yeah, really good week of rugby all round, to be honest. You know, Heineken Cup was strong. MLR is going really strong. We're preparing for those upcoming sevens tournaments for the qualifiers for the Olympics and such. There's a lot of stuff coming down the line. It's going to be a good summer of rugby, and obviously, grassroots rugby's been back as well. So, hope everyone's out there enjoying their rugby. And as I said before, if you're keen on a Monday night beer, I hope you enjoy one after work. Or if you're unemployed at the moment, enjoy one in the middle of the day. Get yourself out into a beer garden with up to six friends from two different households. Don't be playing silly buggers meeting three or four households if you can avoid it. But yeah, enjoy it. And you know, we're expecting there to be big queues outside both Primark and Wetherspoons across the entirety of the UK as of tomorrow again. So enjoy yourselves.
If you're more fitness inclined, gyms are open again as well.
But oh yeah, I do. Yeah.
you can't go with somebody. You've got to train by yourself. So there'll be no PRs this week. No one's going in lifting heavy straight off the bat because you can't get a spot. So, and that's good. I'm playing five-a-side, actually. I'm playing football tomorrow. I've not kicked a football since, I think it was at school.
What a terrible...
So, yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Well, we had a terrible six-a-side team.
We did.
We had a terrible six-a-side team getting fit for Canada tour when we were at school.
And we got mercifully beaten by old men every week.
12-year-old boy scored a hat trick against me, I think, didn't he, when I was in goal for one game. That was
let's not forget your own goal, Daniel, where you sliced the ball and kicked it behind you and it went in.
There was a bobble, Dave. And admittedly, it was an artificial pitch. It was AstroTurf, but there was a bobble.
Yeah.
There was a big bobble there. It skipped up. There was a strong wind as well. The wind carried it over my foot. So really, it was whoever passed it back to me's fault. But I'm not here to place blame, Dav, and neither am I going to accept any blame or responsibility for my shit footballing abilities. You know.
That should be fun anyway. So making my Leicester Forest East Monday night Premier League debut as... I imagine, sort of in defence, because I can get in the way and maybe just ping some long balls. Just
yeah, you shouldn't lose too many headers, Dav. So fair play to that. And what one final shout I wanted to have just before we go as well is obviously this week it's been sort of 10 years to the day since we rocked up and won the under 16 Leicestershire Schools County Cup final. So that came up in the old memories on Facebook. Big shout out to every member of that squad. I'm sure some of them listened to the show. Obviously that was hilarious, wasn't it, really, to see that. 10 years is gone very quickly, Dave. 10 years to the week.
Couldn't believe it'd be 10 years actually.
Mm.
Quite a funny story actually about that tournament. We lost the opening round, but let's be honest, the administrative wizardry of Sir Dave Haybrock, the master in charge of rugby. Which is a very jumped up title.
The Duke of Leicestershire. The Master of Disaster. The Count of Monte Fisto. Honest Dave 146. the only man who can walk into a revolving door and somehow make everyone believe that he didn't.
He's a legend of the administrative and rugby game, is old Diesel Dave. But yeah, apparently, we lost, but he swindled us back into the knockout round despite losing the opening round due to, I think, so many non-played fixtures that it made like no sense. We actually turned up and played, lost the stupid triangular tournament thing, and then got back
in. It was like 5-minute halves, wasn't it? It was something ridiculous like that.
It was ridiculous, yeah. It was a stupid tournament. I didn't even play. I played one game in that entire campaign because I broke my collarbone earlier in the season before the qualifying rounds, played in the semi-final, which we won, and then had horrendous tonsillitis for the final, missed the final. I was there watching, but I was in agony the whole time.
It was a special campaign for many reasons.
Yeah, so
breaches of Leicestershire County rugby rules, I'm sure.
It was like when Denmark won the Euros because Yugoslavia had a war. except,
yeah, exactly the same, Dave. it was very similar. Wow, but yeah, no, really good to see that and sort of reconnect with a few of the guys we played with. Actually, sort of having a bit of a laugh about how we used to look, some of the dodgy lids on show and stuff like that. But yeah, no, just want to give a bit of a shout out there.
No, the dodgy lids on show. You meant me.
Yeah, I did.
As all of our friends, you added me and said I still have shit hair, which is true. There's a lot more bad haircuts in that picture as well, but you sing without me.
I had a nice high and tight four all over back in the day there, so that's where I can't take that risk anymore. It won't grow back, and I'll be patchy.
I was rocking the grungy long hair look, which I now have enforced upon me because of not having the hairdressers open for months. But
That's tomorrow as well. Yeah, get yourselves out and get a Barnet chop as well. I'm expecting to see many horrendous mullet down here in the southwest because it seems to be the fashion. But yeah, no, well, you know, good week coming up then, Dav. You know, thanks a lot for the time, mate. Enjoy chatting and catching up with you. We have a good laugh here. And obviously things are kicking off with the sevens. It's great for us to be able to announce now tournaments that we're going to, and that'll be on social media. I'm sure there'll be lots of great updates for the website as well. And, you know, everyone knows hopefully where to find us by now, but we are the 99s Rugby on Instagram. You can find us there. Our website is www.the99srugby.com, and you can catch our podcast on all of those decent providers. And if we're not on them, then probably should be getting your podcast from somewhere else, because if they haven't got the 99s on it by now, with the massive amount of 175 downloads that we've had, listened to in several countries apparently, possibly by bots, possibly real people, who knows, but either way, if you're not getting the 99s podcast for your provider, maybe you need to think about changing. But
just one last point on the fact that we have many, many listeners around the world. We have quite a sizable Australian listening core, and not only that, in Sydney specifically. And this week was the first round of the Shoot Shield, the Sydney comp. So shout out to my beloved Hunter Wildfires, because I played in Newcastle for a season. They got smashed today by Sydney Uni, but yeah, they tried their best. So on your Hunter Wildfires, I believe someone I played with is in that team as well. The Raj Mahal, which is his nickname. Obviously, it's not his real name. hopefully, he's pulling the strings at fly half today. So, yeah, not going to go for the rest of the teams or rest of the games, but up the Wildfires, so, and up the Shoot Shield. And fucking good on you, mate, to all the Aussies who seem to be listening to us. I think most of them are friends who we know anyway who aren't Australian, but fucking day for it, mate.
Brilliant. Well, you know, if you are enjoying the podcast, get in touch with us either through Instagram, whatever, and connect to us then. And we look forward to hearing from you. But for now, I've been Dan. He's David. He's still got shit hair. He's had it for 10 years plus. No matter what kind of ice cream you enjoy, as long as it's not a fab, get yourself one this week if the sun comes out. Otherwise, don't bother, because if it's a fab, 2/3 of it is probably crap. Thanks for listening.
Peace.